This week on Monday marked International Day of Zero Tolerance Against Female Genital Mutilation, or female genital cutting as it's also called. It's estimated that more than 200 million women and girls have been cut worldwide, according to the United Nations. And more women are speaking out to end the practice, as they do here in a video produced by Love Matters India.
A cut that pierced my life. A small nick. Just a piece of skin, they say. No more, no less. How does it change anything?
It changed everything for my loved ones and me.
It changed my loved ones for me.
Female genital cutting. 200 million women have undergone this worldwide.
One of the women featured in this video is 34-year-old Maria Taher, who co-founded the NGO SEO. Taher was born in the US to parents from India. When she was 7, her parents took her on a trip to visit relatives in India, where she had a piece of clitoral hood removed. Taher is now advocating against the practice of FGM. She's also tracked down other women who are cut. When we spoke, she began explaining why ending FGM is particularly important to her.
It was something that I really wanted to shed light on because I had undergone it myself as a 7-year-old. I was born in the United States and then taken back to India, not for the sole purpose of having this done. We used to go back on vacation every other year to visit relatives, but the summer when I was 7, I also had this procedure done. So I always knew that it happened, and a lot of my family members had it done. Family members had it done in the United States as well. And
actually on American soil then?
Yes, on American soil. So I was always familiar with it. Technically, though, when it happened to me, it was not illegal in the United States at that time. The federal law passed 6 or 7 years after it happened to me. The more I did research, I also recognized there was a lack of awareness that it was happening to communities outside of the African continent or African ethnic communities. So I never found much out there in terms of research about women like me. So I really wanted to shed light that this is a complicated form of violence as well, because it's oftentimes confused with love and the idea that this is what you do to ensure that a woman grows up to be a morally sound person. It's controlling your sexuality, but it's so conflicted with these other ideas and thoughts. It was a form of violence that is oftentimes continued on women by women, so mothers to daughters, or other female relatives to other female relatives. And so oftentimes men have been left out. That's shifting too.
You mentioned that it's violence done by women, done to other women. And I always wondered, especially the mothers and aunts who've undergone it themselves, why would they do this to their daughters? Is it really just for the sake of tradition?
I think people underestimate the idea of tradition, how powerful a force it is. It's something that's considered a social norm. So it's something that's considered, if you don't get it done, you are not doing the best you can for your child. And it has been convoluted and construed in a way that it is a form of taking care of your child in a way. Like all of the taboos that in many cultures you see around menstruation too, and thoughts that you might be unclean or something. And these are old traditions, old ideas, or harmful practices that are steeped into the culture now. And those are social norms, but those are things you have to change too.
I also read that sometimes, even though the parents are against the practice, that grandparents then take matters into their own hands. I think the parents went away to another village, and so the daughters were left in the care of the grandparents. And then, well, first thing when the parents were away was that the grandmother took the girls to get the procedure done.
We've heard stories like that too, where it might have been somebody's aunt that took them or another female relative that took them. So there is a lot of social pressure that happens as well. So the parents might not want it to continue. And I think particularly for communities that are very close-knit, and the community I was raised in is considered a very close-knit community, where you're afraid of being socially ostracized. And there's a lot of fear that if you don't have this done, or if you go against the wishes of perhaps religious leaders or other members, that you risk that too, that social exclusion.
That's Maria Taher speaking about the practice of female genital mutilation or cutting here on DW's World in Progress. We'll hear more from her when we return. We're still here with Maria Taher talking about the practice of FGM. I asked her about the link between cutting and religion.
The Dalibores are a Muslim community, and so the Quran does not say anything about this. And that has been heavily stated by many Islamic scholars that this is not in the Quran. But the Dalibores also have some other religious texts that they follow. And there are some texts that do claim that you must continue this. And I know in the last year, the religious heads of this particular community came out saying that it is a practice in our holy books, and so that we must continue it. Interestingly, though, the shift to religion or stating religion as the primary reason to continue this was something that kind of changed in the last year. Because when I was doing my thesis, and what I heard a lot of other people say previously, too, is they always were told that it was done to control sexuality. But now we're hearing sort of the reasoning change that it's actually done for hygiene. And that's the religious reason for why you do it. There's no proof at all that it has any health benefits. Yet people still cling to the idea that it does. A lot of times you will hear people say that people that are for it or are trying to justify the continuation of it say that, oh, those are more severe forms that happen, you know, in Africa. Those are the ones that are mutilation and should not continue. But what we're doing is safe, particularly if it's been done in a health setting, which is a trend that we're seeing occurring as well. And in some countries, like in Indonesia, I know in Singapore, there it is medicalized. And so health professionals are doing it much more. It's amazing what people do to justify a tradition, to try to make it okay in their mind that this is something that we can continue, that we're not hurting anybody.
Did your parents prepare you for the trip? Did they tell you what was coming, or was it a total surprise?
I honestly don't remember. I have few memories of it happening. And I was 7 too. And I don't know if part of it is I just blocked it out or part of it is because I was young and I can't remember. All I remember really is that I remember the actual event, like going to the building. I remember going upstairs. I remember being put on the floor. I remember being cut. I remember my mom comforting me too. And I remember the ladies afterwards actually comforting me as well and giving me a soda to drink. The day it happened, I remember crying because it hurt, but I don't really remember much afterwards. I had been taught that it was something celebratory. Even when my sister had it done, I thought it was something that was celebratory. And I never even thought to question it until high school, when I think a friend of mine mentioned the actual word female genital mutilation.
Have you ever, when you started to become aware of this topic, have you ever discussed with your parents why they opted for FGM or cutting when you were a little girl?
I have. I mean, the more I started doing research and the more I've done work on this, I've had a lot of conversations with my parents now. It was really, it's tradition. It boils down to it. It was what they were expected to do. My mom was the one who, she told me that she was afraid of seeing me in pain, and my aunt came along because she was afraid of that. And so I feel like, I wonder how much of that was family pressure from the women in the family that I should have it done. And it was something you don't question others in the family either. We've had conversations, and it's something that I think people are changing their ideas and thoughts. You're seeing that social change happening. Social change doesn't happen overnight, but you're starting to see the questions, you're starting to see the conversations coming out. Like, we're trying to build a critical mass of people, right, to show that they're, that this is something that we can choose not to continue, because I think a lot of times people don't realize that that option even exists, that you can choose not to continue it. And so being able to show that there are people that have decided that is so impactful.